You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. The Super Bowl is over, so college basketball now rightfully take its place as the center of the sports world. A lot of people out there might not have been following the sport too closely over the last several months. That's what we're here for, to break down another wild and crazy week in the sports. A lot of upsets last week, a lot of shocking results, shall we say, but we're a positive bunch. We start with the winners each week, so I'll give you that honor. Who was your big winner of last week in college basketball?
I'm going to go, obviously, with the bias of the Big East, I'm going to take St. John's as the big winner. Okay. The one of the 13 winningest programs in college basketball per a tweet that I did not fact check. It was something along the lines of, this is the first time, I think, ever that none of the top 13 winningest programs have been ranked. And the Johnnies received some votes, actually. They beat Villanova, and then they beat Providence in a huge bounce-back week. And there's actually an argument in a group I'm involved with about Mike Anderson and his abilities. You and I very, very notably had said that we did not understand the hire because of the fact that Mike Anderson spent literally his entire career in the Southeast and then all of a sudden was going to uproot, go to New York, go to St. John's, which isn't the easiest job, high expectations, a lot of pressure, and in a tough conference, no less, and then compete following the Chris Mullin era, which, as we know, was all a disaster. He has never had a losing season. He has 9 NCAA tournament wins, and he has an Elite Eight and a Sweet 16 under his belt. If that's not good, I'm sorry, a 64% career win percentage. If that's not good, then I don't know what is. He has the Big East, current Big East Player of the Year, Julian Champagne. He's got the current Big East Freshman of the Year in Posh Alexander. I mean, things are clicking right now at St. John's, and they are a team that with their style of play, I don't think anyone in the Big East wants to play right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is – people do forget. He has never had a losing season, and that is important, not in sort of a meme way that we like to throw around the Oliver Purnell has never been fired statistics. Yes. But that's relevant, and that matters. And the argument kind of against – or the head-scratching that occurred when Anderson went to St. John's was never about whether or not he could coach. He's proven he can. But it was just interesting from a fit perspective. And, I mean, not a ton was expected of St. John's at all this year. It's kind of a lot of talent had departed from the program. You know, guys like Figueroa going to Oregon. But Champagne has been phenomenal, one of the best players in the entire conference. And you could – yeah, I would certainly make the argument that the Johnnies are the hottest team in the Big East right now. It doesn't get any better than beating Villanova, who has owned the conference. And it's I was texting you about this on Saturday. It was a little jarring to see kind of Fox put up Seton Hall's tournament resume and their key win on the season is St. John's. Like, that's not nothing now. Like, that matters.
I mean, thank God for St. John's making a comeback here. Otherwise, Seton Hall has basically no marquee wins. The UConn win helps, and Penn State continues to be all over the place, so that will continue to help. But it's becoming one of those things where the Big East, like we've said week after week, there's a very clear top two, and then what? You know, who is going to come out of the rest of the pack as the number three team, the number four team? Will they get four teams in the tournament? At this rate, you'd have to imagine they would as a power conference, but it is like Providence has fallen off the face of the earth. Marquette is struggling. St. John's is now coming up out of nowhere. Seton Hall's kind of floundering around in that like 10-11 range. But then, you know, Xavier hasn't played in forever. So what's going to happen? But good to see someone at least taking advantage of the opportunities at hand and St. John's picking up a couple big wins this week.
Yeah, there's a good number of teams that are kind of floundering in that maybe 9 to 12 seed range. You've got the two surefire teams, Villanova. Creighton's been struggling, but they're still very comfortably in the field. And then it's a lot of teams just trying to stay on the right side of the bubble. And I mean, St. John's, make the argument, is as good a shot as anyone right now to make the tournament with the way they've been playing. And obviously beating Villanova, that win will carry more so than any other in the conference. So good for Mike Anderson. I know there is, again, a lot of doubters about whether he could succeed at St. John's, coming from, you know, a background that has no connection to the Northeast at all. But this season, at least, they are they're looking like they're playing their way into the tournament field.
So it's always good when you can get, you know, a storied program like that back in the NCAA tournament, so long as it's not at the hands of a team I might like from the state of New Jersey.
Yeah, the true blue bloods, those 13 teams currently on rank.
Yes.
Not enough people are talking about that.
They aren't. They really are not.
A couple of my big winners of the week, I had both members of the Bragging Rights rivalry. Start with Illinois, most recently crushing Wisconsin, Iota Sumu with a triple-double. And obviously Michigan is not playing. They're on pause, but Illinois keeps winning. They keep creeping up in the Big Ten standings. And as it stands right now, just a half game behind the Wolverines for first place in the Big Ten, which at the top has been as competitive as any conference in the country this year.
This is the Illinois we've been waiting to see. I mean, week after week, we ask the question, when is, you know, this is a team we both loved preseason and expected big things out of. And they really weren't performing in the first basically 10 games of Big Ten play. Yes, they did have a couple nice wins in that, but they also had some head-scratching losses a la Maryland. But here they are. Like, this is what you need to expect out of Illinois, and this is what you are going to continue to see. It's going to be a lot of Iota Sumu. Kofi Coburn will help out where he can on both ends of the floor. And then, again, we've talked about it. Find a consistent third scorer in the game, and you're going to win 9 times out of 10 if you're Illinois.
And Coburn was pretty dominant against Wisconsin as well, and that's certainly what you would want to see in that matchup. So Wisconsin, they've got talent. They do not have an interior presence that can match up with Coburn at all. Mm-hmm. Couple that with a strong performance for much of the game against Indiana, which does have an interior presence that can match up. So all in all, a good week for Coburn, great week for DeSumo. The Illini will go as far as he takes them. And I mean, when he's playing as well as he has been the last few times out, I mean, this is, like you said, the team we liked a lot in the preseason as the pick to win the conference. And it remains to be seen how Michigan will play coming out of pause. We've really seen some teams struggle after long layoffs. So, I mean, Big Ten right now could be right there for the taking for Brad Underwood.
It really could be. And it's just funny how after all the grief they were given and how that, I'm positive there were calls for Brad Underwood's head at certain points this season, but they're right in it. I mean, outside of Ohio State, no one really looks that much of a threat. Iowa has been seemingly figured out at this point, at least by Indiana, for sure.
We'll talk about Iowa.
Purdue is kind of in and out. I can't really put my finger on what Purdue is at this point in the season. Wisconsin, like we said, they've got good guards. The interior play hasn't been great this season, and it will certainly hinder their ability to make a run. But then it's those three teams, Michigan, Ohio State, and Illinois. And of the three, just all playing at the same time, looking at it this season, I think you'd have to take Michigan. But like you said, you got to add in the fact that there's a pause, and at maybe the most important time of the year, because you want to pick up this momentum heading into March. Illinois, Ohio State, both very much alive.
Yeah, Ohio State's playing as well as anyone in the conference as well. I think right now, three bona fide top six teams in the country in the Big Ten. And then, of course, Baylor, Gonzaga, Villanova, even with the loss to St. John's. Illinois and Ohio State are finding the right recipe at the right time in the season. Michigan is started off the season better than anybody, but again, we'll see how that carries over. Hopefully from Michigan perspective, they can start off as well as Villanova did the first couple times out after they had a long layoff. But right now, Illinois and Ohio State doing everything they can to put the pressure on the Wolverines at the top.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Missouri and the SEC. The SEC race is still not really a race at this point. It's Alabama's title to lose. Missouri is the next team there, but they are we talk about, you know, teams being great in very, very specific areas, like Minnesota, best home court advantage in college basketball this year. Missouri might be the best first half team in America this season. Yes. And I think this week especially was the best representation, illustration of that. Getting out to big leads against Kentucky and Alabama, holding on in both. Drew Smith had a great week, 26 and 16 in these two games, but got out to a big lead against Kentucky, end up winning by five. Got out to a 22-point lead against Alabama, end up barely holding on in that one. Strong defensive performance throughout, which is why they're able to hold on for a win there. Some challenges shooting against Alabama, certainly, but take both wins. This is, again, you know, a great coaching performance this season from Quanzo Martin, but like Missouri, first team to figure out Alabama. I mean, they are, I think at this point, they've probably overtaken Tennessee as the second best team in the SEC if they hadn't already.
It's tough. I think there's a lot to like about Missouri. Tennessee just feels like a team that, because of the slow start, they really lost out pretty drastically on what their team could be by this point. I think we're still waiting to see them ramp up a little bit more, but they do play the best defense adjusted on KenPom this season. So it's something to keep an eye on. But Missouri's got like a nice mix of interior presence with outside ability. And what I mean by that is they've got the bigs that can defend, but their guards are also, it's kind of like LSU last year where their guards were so great going downhill, not necessarily great shooters, but definitely getting into the lane and causing some chaos offensively there. When they play defense though, they're as good as any team in the SEC. And I would say outside of those top six that you had mentioned in the entire country.
Yeah, they certainly like to play inside out. We've talked a lot about how great Jeremiah Tillman has been this year in addition to guard play. And that's kind of, again, another example of that in the game against Alabama, and he only managed to shoot 3 of 20 from outside. That's, it's kind of by necessity that you're going to have to go inside early and often. But yeah, they're finding ways to hold on. They're finding ways to win these close games, which matters come tournament time. Again, probably a little too late at this point to realistically talk about catching Alabama, but to be able to get that win in the head-to-head is a big boost to the tournament resume. Alabama's been one of the hotter teams in the country over the last month or so. So again, good week. Been a good season for both of the bragging rights teams.
Yeah.
They have the next team I want to talk about, they have kind of flown under the radar for long enough, as we've talked about. Now we are forced to talk about them in depth as an actually good basketball team. And I'm talking, of course, about Andy Enfield and the USC Trojans getting a big win Saturday night, admittedly over a shorthanded UCLA team, but it was a dominating performance that's worth mentioning. And USC gets into the top 25. They are now 20th nationally, and probably what they care about more, now tied for first in the Pac-12 standings with the other Southern Cal school, UCLA. So, I mean, it's been a rough year for the Pac-12, as we've discussed. USC has a great record, not as many, you know, noteworthy wins to speak of, even with the UCLA roster not being at full strength. The way they were able to dominate on Saturday definitely counts as a marquee win, and I mean, now gives the Trojans the inside track in the conference race.
It does. They have been very good defensively this year. They are another team that is a KenPom darling. They are 13th right now, 25th in offense, 12th defense. tempo certainly plays a bit of a factor, but it's not like, you know, Virginia slow. So that Evan Mobley has been phenomenal, 16-9 this year with three blocks a game. He's shooting almost 60% from the floor. When you've got a guy like that, it just takes so much of the pressure off of guys like Drew Peterson and Taj Eadie on the perimeter, where they can actually open things up and try and shoot the ball as opposed to having to make everything happen. A team that doesn't really have that benefit is a team that we both thought was going to do very well this year, and that's Arizona State. So you're kind of seeing, again, like Missouri, the inside-out play really benefiting USC. And then obviously when you have the athletes that Andy Enfield continuously brings to USC, you're going to play high-quality defense, and that's exactly what the Trojans have been doing.
Yeah, Ethan Anderson has been great on the perimeter as well, had a great night shooting the three against UCLA. And yeah, as we've talked about, there have been just a revolving door of elite big men coming through the program. Mobley's another one, and it is seemingly the best, most balanced roster that has kind of been constructed around one that Andy Enfield's been able to figure out. A lot of question marks in the preseason with all of the new faces, you know, obviously freshmen, but also all of the transfers that were taking a step up in competition. You know, we joke about the Pac-12, but it is still a Power Six conference, and better competition than a lot of these guys had experienced previously. But at this point in the season, it's hard to discount USC too much. The only question really is how they might fare going head-to-head against UCLA. They've passed that test, and right now, not really any other clear-cut challengers in the Pac-12. So if they keep playing like this, they'll bring home a conference title.
Yeah, we do say that, but they have lost already this year to Oregon State. So assuming the road bump is behind them, they look to have a pretty nice end of the season here. Yes, there are five road games of their final eight, but again, road games are not the same this season as they would be in a normal year.
Plenty of losable games.
Yes.
To be sure. That's never out of the question. The Pac-12 never wants to just be normal.
No. They got to make it as complicated as possible so that Bill Walton has to go out on an even bigger limb to get the Conference of Champions the recognition he would like it to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Conference of Champions in non-revenue sports.
Yes.
It's the full title there.
Yeah.
And then my last winner for this week was Loyola. Not that there's anything in a vacuum particularly impressive about beating Evansville, although, again, worth mentioning, Kentucky couldn't do it last year. But they swept Evansville. That's now 10 in a row. They are now a top 25 team. A little bit of the shine comes off their big matchup this week against Drake. The Bulldogs just got blown out by Valpo and honestly almost lost twice in a row to the Crusaders. But Loyola's perspective, they are putting forward a very, very strong resume at this point to be admitted as an at-large team. Still very far from a guarantee there. They would, of course, love to just win the Missouri Valley tournament and remove all doubt, but all the way up to six now defensively per KenPom. And I mean, they're a machine at this point. It's not an overly high level of competition most nights in the Missouri Valley, but they've been steamrolling teams. And I mean, it's Gonzaga goes through this every year, not to put Loyola in the same universe as Gonzaga in terms of a quality team, but in terms of just being much better than most other teams in your own conference, it's easy to get fatigue. We saw that from Gonzaga last week. They almost dropped one they shouldn't have, but Loyola is not having similar problems. They did not look ahead to the big matchup against Drake, and they're just still rolling.
They continue to play great defense. I mean, it's as simple as that. When you are an elite defensive team, as the wise man Dan Hurley once said, you're going to win basketball games. And for all the grief that we have given Porter Moser over, you know, the past year or two, he coaches defense as well as anyone at that level. And the way the Ramblers are playing right now, it is very tough to see them losing to anyone outside of Drake in the Missouri Valley. That said, there are still talented teams in the MVC. This is a competitive conference, one of the more competitive mid-majors in America. And Arch Madness, as it is known, is always one of the bigger surprise upset-filled tournaments that we see come conference tournament time. So honestly, at this point, Loyola just needs to keep rolling. I think that the dream of two bids in the Valley is pretty much dead, unless it is Loyola that can win out the rest of the season and then lose in the conference championship game. But I think Drake losing to Valpo pretty much put an end to that possibility.
Yeah, and the only way you get two in at this point is if Loyola is able to snag an at-large bid. Don't really think that's a possibility for anyone else in the conference at this point. But yeah, we saw how crazy last year was in the Missouri Valley tournament. All of the top three seeds losing in their very first game.
Yeah.
For 4-seed Bradley ended up beating the 7-seed Valpo in the final. So even if Loyola continues this run, earns the top seed, like, things can still happen. Craziness happens all the time at Arch Madness. It's why we love it so much. One of the more entertaining conference tournaments from an unpredictability standpoint, as well as just the actual basketball. But, I mean, just got to keep the eye on the prize. They have been in this situation before. They've got a couple of big games against Drake this week. If they sweep Drake, then I think a lot would have to happen for them to not get an at-large bid should they find themselves in that position. There were a lot of ifs in that statement, but
right.
the point remains, they're the one team at this point that we can reasonably think would get an at-large nod. But they can really remove any lingering doubts if they can sweep Drake this week.
Absolutely. And if Drake plays anything like they did against Valpo, that should be a pretty easy pair of wins for Loyola.
Yeah, definitely feel like Drake was looking ahead a little bit.
Mm-hmm, 100%.
That was all my winners. Who else do you have?
Just going to give a shout out to Belmont. They have won 17 straight. They're 20-1 overall and 14-0 in the Ohio Valley. They still do have both games against Morehead State, who is their toughest competition left. The Eagles are 12-2 in league play right now, sitting comfortably in second place. But a conference that has given us many NCAA tournament, I don't want to say Cinderella's necessarily, because I think that implies like a bigger run than has happened, but upsets in the NCAA tournament. Remember Ja Morant destroying the university formerly known as Marquette in the first round.
Tournament wins, at least.
Yeah.
For that. Belmont has been rolling. That's a team, though, that is going to be very nervous come conference tournament time, because I really don't see a way in which they get in without winning that, in large part because their strength of schedule on the year is on the wrong side of 300 that you like to be. They're certainly winning most of these games. They, like Drake, lost one of their best players who transfer and have not missed a beat. So you'd love to see that. I would love to see a very good Belmont team get into the tournament and put the fear of God into another Power Six opponent. They will have to continue winning out the rest of the way for that to happen. But yeah, this could be a very scary, 12 or 13 seed as it seems like they are every time they make the tournament.
Absolutely. They just need, like you said, just keep winning. It sucks for the mid-majors, but that's the simplest way to put it. Just keep winning.
Yeah. That was your last one?
That was it. That's the end of the winning.
Go Belmont. Yeah, a lot of losers. As you said, there were quite a bit of quite a few upsets last week, but we need to start with a team we've talked about several times already this season. That is the Iowa Hawkeyes. The Big Ten title dream seems like it should be dead.
Mm-hmm.
As if there was any more doubt. So I'm quickly souring more and more on the Hawkeyes as, you know, they continue to show us time and again who they are. Never thought they were a bad basketball team, just a deeply, deeply flawed one. So I could kind of understand some of the conversation about them challenging for a Final Four or a Big Ten title. But when in the year of our Lord 2021, you're getting swept by an Archie Miller coached Indiana team, you are a fraud. You do not get to call yourself a contender. It's just they have used up all of the goodwill that they had in the preseason and through the first couple weeks of Big Ten play. They are just tanking fast.
Yeah, they have one of the biggest splits, offense and defense, and KenPom going first offensively to 121st defensively. Another team that certainly had early season hype around them, not nearly the level of Iowa, but when they started to play well, was LSU, who is also in that realm with the eighth best offense going down to the 138th best defense. It just doesn't win. You have to play defense in order to win. And Iowa, LSU, teams like this are quickly finding that out. I mean, Notre Dame is even a top 20 offensive team, according to KenPom, and they are horrific on defense, and they sit at 7-10. Defense is more important than ever in this season, because I don't think every college basketball game is a game of runs. But I don't think they get the same juice that you get from a fan-filled arena. I think you lose a couple points on each, and that's where locking in defensively is the key.
Yeah, and I mean, it's in about a month, they've dropped over 50 spots in the defensive rankings. So, I mean, it's been a problem. It's even more of a problem now. And it's, as we talk about every season, showing no signs of getting better. You know, you can kind of excuse a loss to Ohio State that was circled as one of the games of the week nationally, certainly the game of the week in the Big Ten. And Ohio State, as we've said, is playing as well as anyone in the Big Ten not named Illinois. So, you know, you can understand giving up a ton of points to that team. Ohio State is still one of the best offensive teams in the country. So completely understand that. Again, it's like, I'm like anti-biased. Like, it's, I'm saying if you're going to come forth and throw up a second consecutive dud against Indiana, like, this is what's going to happen. And to Iowa's credit, like, Luka got some help. That's another thing that's kind of been a struggle for them at times. Joe Wieskamp balled out, especially in the first half, 15 points before the break. But obviously they were not able to keep it going for the duration of the game, not even able to get to the 70-point marker, which has seemed like the absolute floor for this offense. Just for whatever reason, this year they have decided that Indiana is just where we're not going to show up.
Yeah, both games. They failed to reach 70 in both games against Indiana. And in a normal year, that's probably not the worst thing in the world, just saying, like, Indiana is going to be playing well. And this year, as you know, they've been all over the road. And it's not of the teams to get swept by right now. It's not the worst, but it certainly does not help your case. And like we said, when they first lost to Indiana, this is why they aren't a national title threat. This is why I just simply cannot believe in them. And it's because their defense doesn't show up enough, gives Indiana a chance to win ball game, and they do, who is, as we've said, struggled so many times offensively this season. And then, you know, when you play the good teams, you've got to play defense in some way. Your offense simply can't carry you. You score 85 points and lose. That's a tough way to lose in college basketball.
Yeah, nothing quite as egregious as the run they gave up in the first game, but still 9-0 run late really sank their chances in this one, and just, again, not really being mentally tough, not being able to close teams out. I mean, the thing I'm maddest about is just that sweeping Iowa is going to get Archie like another 4 years, but that's really at the core of all this. But yes, in a vacuum, Iowa losing to Indiana, not the worst thing in the world for the Hawkeyes, just kind of piling on to everything that's been happening over the last month or so. Now only 7-5 in the Big Ten, completely falling out of the picture, all the way down to 6th in the conference. So, and really not at all where they anticipated being at this point in the preseason. But to make Iowa feel a little better, probably the worst loss of last week was Houston.
Yes.
As karma struck, one of the many upsets that occurred last week on Wednesday, had the opportunity to play Gonzaga on Saturday. There was an opening in both team schedules due to various cancellations. Would have been great opportunity for a marquee win, which, I mean, Houston doesn't have a ton of them. But scheduled NAIA Power, Our Lady of the Lake, and then come out and lose to East Carolina, who is consistently amongst the bottom feeders in what is already a weak American athletic conference this year. So not a good visual at all for Houston.
No, I get to an extent not wanting to play that game, but I also don't understand it, because you are guaranteeing a national spotlight on your program, you know, the Houston resurrection or resurgence, whatever Ross Dean calls it, is
redemption.
A redemption. Yeah. Wrong R word. And it's, they've come a long way, and Calvin Sampson, like him or not, has done a great job, and he has made this a legitimate team that can make a run in the NCAA tournament. They play great defense. They are guard oriented. They've got very good, talented players. And then you go and lose to East Carolina, who is, like we said, not good at all. Just not good at all. They have, what the hell is his name? Jaden Gardner, who had a phenomenal year last year as well and has consistently been a double-double threat, but there's really not much else on that team aside from him. And you still end up allowing 82 points and 11 of 24 from the three-point line. I mean, those things can't happen, especially when you, I won't say duck a game with Gonzaga, but choose not to play a top team.
I'll call it ducking. I mean, like, you, I understand from the perspective of you don't want to play a game that you're likely going to lose, but like, why get into the sport in the first place if that's the attitude you're going to have? Like, this would be the matchup between the two strongest non-Power Six programs.
Yeah.
Gonzaga and Houston. Houston has been good enough this season, the last several, I think, to merit that designation. And Gonzaga is Gonzaga. We love the Zags, can't talk about them enough. But that's a pretty good situation to be in if you're Houston. Like, if you're worried that you're going to get killed, that's kind of the expectation that everybody has going into that game. So worst case,
it feels like it can't lose, right? Honestly.
Worst case, like what everyone thinks will happen, happens. And there's no shame in losing to Gonzaga this year. There's no shame in getting blown out by Gonzaga this year. They have done it to a number of very good teams. That does not automatically drop you, out of the top 10 or anything like that. Losing to East Carolina does a lot more damage than, you know, dropping one to Gonzaga. And sure, they still could have lost to East Carolina, even if they played the game against Gonzaga. But with the combination of those two things happening, and like, you can't even use the excuse of East Carolina's a trap game, so you're looking ahead to Gonzaga.
Right.
They, I mean, didn't have to really show up at over like 40% against Saturday's opponent. They're still going to win. But it's all around a bad situation. I would have loved to see Houston Gonzaga, you know, still we missed out on Gonzaga Baylor matchup. I'm upset about that. Like, the maximum number of games we can schedule between two good teams, I am all for that. So
yeah,
it's upsetting to me that no one could find a way to play Gonzaga this weekend.
And, you know, it's strength on strength. Great offense for Gonzaga against strong defense for Houston. Stylistically, very different teams. You know, Houston's in the 300s in regards to tempo, and Gonzaga plays very fast. So I am disappointed that we were robbed of that possibility.
Me too.
All for Lady of the Lake, or Our Lady of the Lake.
Yep. Yeah, that was tough. And like, I don't know. Also, like, I don't love the ducking Gonzaga, but like, if you're gonna put a game there, that was the best opponent you could find.
Right.
I doubt that.
This is what we're gonna say.
Yeah. Just rough loss after rough loss on Wednesday. Go to another one, Creighton. They are still struggling, dropping one to Georgetown, who, I mean, we expected would challenge DePaul, and they have for the most part, as the unenviable title as worst team in the Big East. That was the biggest win of the year for Patrick Ewing. And I mean, Creighton's got to find something, and they've got to find it fast.
Yeah, I would say Big East title is regular season title, I should say, is pretty much out of reach for everyone. Yeah. Xavier might have a chance, but they have so many games to make up that it just doesn't seem likely that even if they did, play a couple more games, that they would ever be awarded the title. But I said it, Norland and I said it jokingly, but the 4-game pause may have done Georgetown some good. Like, they may have needed the time away because they were playing some atrocious basketball, barely breaking the 60-point mark in their last 4 games. Get the pause, beat Providence in a tight one, and then come out and play very well against Creighton on the road, no less. One of the few venues in the Big East that allows fans is the CHI Health Center, or whatever the hell it's called these days. But Bile has been phenomenal. Javon Blair has been great. They're just getting their veteran players to play well. Qudus Wahab, again, in the paint has been superb. Just a classic back to the basket big man. And Jamarco Pickett, when he isn't turning the ball over, is a very good guard. So they don't – it's never been a question of if they have talent, because they have it. They don't have it as deep as a typical Georgetown team would. But Patrick Ewing is going to ride with the guys he thinks are the best. And that's why you're seeing Pickett, Harris, and Blair all with 35-plus minutes in that game. And when they're on, they're a tough team to beat because the momentum is going to keep rolling.
Yeah, I mean, you're short your biggest leaders from that started a season ago. So I think at this point, almost feels like Georgetown's playing with house money a little bit, because there's really nothing expected of them. And any wins like this, even beating Providence, kind of feels like gravy. But, you know, beating a ranked team on the road, that's certainly something you will take 10 times out of 10. But I feel like we've had Creighton kind of in the loser category for a couple weeks now. And again, like they are right there, or should be right there behind Villanova in the Big East hierarchy. Ton of talent on the roster still. And you've got, weapons all over the court offensively, but it has seemed like a struggle this year for Greg McDermott to get the most out of his team, or at the level that they should be at.
Yeah, unless they're playing Seton Hall, they just really aren't playing very well. They have 3 home losses this year. Marquette, who, as we've talked about, has really struggled this season. Providence, who is an absolute enigma of a basketball program at this point. And now Georgetown, who is still in 10th place in the Big East I guess if you look at the standings, it is technically even, but they are 2 wins behind everyone else above them in the win-loss column. So it's concerning that they can just disappear like this. And it has been just inconsistent shooting, which we never expected from a team like this. You know, Zegarowski certainly had a disappointing season, although he is still performing pretty well with 15 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds a game. He is still shooting over 40% from both the field and 3. But as a team, 37% when you shoot as much as you do is not going to cut it. And they really don't have that interior presence that they need or were hoping to have in the form of maybe a Damian Jefferson or Kalkbrenner or even Epperson. I mean, there's so many different guys, Christian Bishop, that were expected to take on that role, and no one has really seized the opportunity. Yeah, I know Jefferson's been injured a little bit. He's got a hobbled ankle, but that someone's got to step up because Creighton's almost too predictable right now offensively.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the home loss to Marquette. They almost made a bad week even worse. Very close to getting swept by the Golden Eagles this past week after already dropping one to Georgetown. So at least they escaped that with a 3-point win. But yeah, I mean, that's the high watermark for the week. That's kind of a problem. But
right.
Yeah. So somebody's going to step up. And it's, as you said, Creighton is very solidly in the field, but they're in danger of, you know, dropping so far that they end up getting, you know, a lot more than they would have wanted in a first round opponent. This is a team that is talented enough to be a top three seed.
Yeah.
Obviously not in the picture right now, but just got to stay the course and avoid, you know, falling too much further from where they already are.
Yeah, it just feels like one of those situations where you get them and they all of a sudden they're like an 8 or a 9 seed and you're wondering, how the hell did this happen?
Right.
And maybe they do win their first two games. You know, they knock off a 1 seed in the second round and you're like, how is this possible that they fell so far? And it's just they did not put games together when it came to Big East play, especially against the teams they should beat.
Yeah, so we'll see. Greg's got his work cut out for him. There were quite a few struggles in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Texas now dropped 3 in a row. Mm-hmm. Most notably recently to Oklahoma State. You can understand, you know, they lost to Oklahoma, Mr. January. We talked about him. Losing to Baylor, you would have hoped that it was a little bit more of a competitive game from Texas, but
right.
Nobody's beaten Baylor this year. Hard to fault them too much. Oklahoma State game, it just seemed like Texas had no interest in winning. Neither did Oklahoma State for large portions of the second half and overtimes. But
that's honestly been how Oklahoma State's played all year, though. I feel like they just don't want to – they want to be in the game, but they don't want to win it.
And it has backed them all the way into the top 25. But Texas just could not hit an outside shot to save their life. They should have had – a significant interior advantage. Boone played a phenomenal game for Oklahoma State, but overall, Texas just has the horses in there. And I mean, most of the league does not. They're unable to fully take advantage there, despite, you know, multiple offensive rebounds seemingly every trip in, you know, the last 5 minutes of the game and both overtime periods. But another game they're unable to close out. And I mean, they're free-falling a little bit in the Big 12, which, as we've said, very competitive conference. Texas has had a great season for much of the year, but right now they are they're spiraling. And it said in the preseason, like, if Shaka Smart can't figure it out with this team, I don't know if he ever will.
Right.
They're in a good place overall resume, but they are a little bit in the danger zone right now where you have to reel it in, similar to Creighton, but Texas has a little bit more they've done in terms of quality wins, but the Big 12 is extremely challenging, minus two teams at the very bottom. You have to figure out a way to recalibrate and get back to the form that you started the season with, or else everything could fall apart very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've talked about this before, but when teams get jump shot happy is when they start to lose, and that's exactly what's happening with Texas at this point. Never, and I mean never, I don't care how many overtimes are played, should a Texas team shoot 35 threes in a game. That it should not happen. When you have 22 offensive rebounds and don't break 70 points, that should be a crime. You should run for the entire two-hour practice or whatever is next. Just mind-blowing that this team could lose this game because there were just so many chances, like you said. And 21 turnovers, also not a great number to have there, but they're so big. They're so athletic. Why are they not attacking the rim on every single possession? They got to the line 27 times. That number should always be above the 3-point total if you're Texas. You are a big team. You are an athletic team. You are a strong team. Get downhill. Get to the rim, and you should win 9 out of 10 games you play.
Not only does it not make sense they're shooting that many threes, like especially if they're not going in. If you're only hitting like five of those threes at a certain point, you have to stop and think, like, what are we doing? Like, I can see there are games out there, you get hot, you hit maybe like 15, keep shooting, feed the hot hand. Like, to just do that for 40 or 50 minutes of basketball and not make any sort of deviation from that plan, especially with how your roster is constructed, I just don't understand that at all. But that's why they caught the L there.
It is. And it's well earned. I mean, that's the best way to put it. It's, they earned the loss. You look at the box score and you simply wonder how it's possible. But then you watch the actual footage and you're like, of course they lost this game. They're lucky to only lose it by 8.
Yeah, lucky that it wasn't in regulation.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. And the other Big 12 team I wanted to shout out was Kansas. Like, in a vacuum, losing to West Virginia, not bad, but they have been, I mean, right there in free fall mode as well. They are here's how bad it is for Kansas now. And they tried to make it a game with West Virginia, and then it seemed like one of those situations they spent so much time, so much energy digging themselves out of the hole, they just did not have enough to get over the hump, and McBride and West Virginia were able to pull away. But Kansas right now is not even in the top half of the Big 12. Like, that is unheard of in the Bill Self era, but that is the state of Kansas basketball, right? How 2020, 2021 has gone in college basketball this season, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, the issues we've identified still exist, still getting beat up on the inside, still some inconsistent outside shooting. And I mean, too much of the time, lack of toughness on the defensive end. And they have slid steadily on that side of the ball after what was a very promising start to the season, with the exception of the Gonzaga game. But again, if you're closer to Kansas State and Iowa State than you are to Baylor, then we've got some serious problems.
Yeah, they've lost 5 of their last 7. I mean, they've been horrific on the road. And while they do still have 2 games against Iowa State and 1 against Kansas State, they do have the other 4 are ranked opponents: Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, at Texas, and Baylor. You got to win the games you need to, and even if you split those, I don't know if it's top half of the Big 12 still.
Yeah, I mean, that's how the Big 12 is this year. More often than not, you're going to face a ranked team. Like, Kansas is now in the club with fellow unranked teams, TCU, Kansas State, and Iowa State. Kansas is a 4th. That's the entire list.
Like, yes.
That's the company they're keeping now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the depth of the Big 12, like we've talked about, has been phenomenal all season long. And Oklahoma State still has that postseason ban hanging around their head.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens come March if, you know, the tournament or the NCAA is, generous and decides, oh, no, we'll get rid of that. If whatever, you know, you take a 2-year ban following this or something.
Yeah, I feel like if Oklahoma State has a resume that is good enough to play in the NCAA tournament, I have a feeling that the powers that be will find a way for Cade Cunningham to play. Call it a hunch.
That's going out on a real limb here.
I know. I've got a couple more, but I'll take a break, defer to you if you want to pile on anybody else.
I have one more. And that is St. Louis. They came off a very long pause, basically a month, almost the same exact timing as Villanova, and played the exact opposite way. They lost to Dayton, and then they lost to a very subpar LaSalle team. They did beat St. Bonaventure, which is a nice win, but a team that was in the top 25 and looked to be a shoe-in for the NCAA tournament is now on the ropes a little bit, and that is just how quickly things can change in 2020-21, the college basketball season this year. They have some work to do for sure in the Atlantic 10. I believe they played 3 games now in conference play, and that is significantly the least number. Most teams are in the 7 to 9 range in terms of games played. Dayton has played 11, Rhode Island 13, so some very high up there, and then the Billikens stuck at 1 and 2 right now. But they need to win games, and they need to beat the good teams that are up near the top, because Richmond has not had the year we expected. Dayton has been pretty up and down. Davidson has been pretty meh, but then there's VCU and the current leader, St. Bonaventure. So got to win some games there, especially if you hope to keep an at-large bid alive for the Billikens.
Hey, St. Louis was a great hope for the A-10 with how they started the year, but I mean, it's they've come back to earth partially by way of, you know, the extended break. I mean, the great wins they had at the start of the season over LSU and NC State have not aged as well as they probably hoped at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just the A-10 is not necessarily the conference we thought it could be early in the season. Obviously, Kentucky was not the team we thought they were. That win by Richmond has not really aged that well either. And there's not really a lot of elite wins available in the conference. There are good wins you can get, but the bulk of the A-10 is stuck between, you know, about the 50th and 100 best teams in America. I'd probably throw about half the conference in there. And teams are, I feel like, sliding more than they are rising up. Like even a team like LaSalle, which put a couple of good wins together, one of those over St. Louis, they turn around and they drop one to Fordham, who is just consistently one of the worst teams in the conference, if not the worst, year in and year out. But
right,
it's if St. Louis wants to be an at-large team, they almost have to run the table. They have a lot of games to make up, and there are a lot more bad losses available to them than there are good wins. So it's not an ideal situation, kind of how they're trying to battle back from time off, and obviously coming out of the gate slow in their return. But if they want to, you know, get back into the field without having to win the conference tournament, it's just win, baby.
Yeah, they need to win, and they have no road wins though so far this year, and they are 2-2 in quad three games. So the resume does not look great.
No, yeah, it's unfortunate. And like there are teams like Clemson could probably, you know, say a similar thing. Like it's been rough. Like Clemson at least got back on the horse a little bit by blowing out Syracuse this weekend, but it's been night and day, kind of the two seasons that you have within a season, you know,
yeah, kind of
pre-pause and post-pause. Like not everybody is Villanova and can just handle that seamlessly, or, you know, as close as you can expect. So unfortunate for St. Louis, but a lot of games left for them. So winning cures all, so to speak. So see if they can figure that out a bit. Had a couple more. I mean, we talked about Drake already, but like,
yeah,
woof. Valpo is not a good team. They should have lost two in a row. They were lucky to escape the first one. And then you would think after the scare you got the first time, you would come out locked in the second game, not taking anybody lightly, ready to go. Instead, you lose by 17. Like that, like it's your first loss of the season after winning 18 games in a row, which is ridiculous that my next sentence is going to be what it is, but that just killed your at-large chances.
Like, yep.
It's you can say it's unfair, but it is what it is.
That's like, the margin of error. I mean, yeah. History has shown us that you just can't lose to any even remotely looking bad looking teams in a mid-major conference. And that is exactly what they did with Valpo. A split with Loyola, they would have been all right. But now it's, you need to sweep Loyola and make a run. Otherwise at large hopes are dead, which I think they are dead already.
To not only lose, but to lose where the outcome was never really in doubt is even more damning. But my last loser of the week, going back to the crazy midweek we had, Florida was just creeping into the top 25. They've battled a ton of adversity with Keontae Johnson and everything going on in that situation. But I mean, really the only team that you could say for most of the year that has challenged Vanderbilt as one of the worst teams in the SEC, dealing with a lot of their own COVID issues, a lot of games not happening, Frank Martin battling the virus. But South Carolina, just not a team you can lose to at home if you want to consider yourself one of the better teams, the SEC, or really just an NCAA tournament team at all. That was a giant egg that Florida laid. And unfortunately for them, right as they were seemingly back on the horse and building momentum after some of their own struggles, but that quickly vanished.
Yeah, just a huge letdown off the West Virginia win, which, as we've seen, has looked pretty good. West Virginia's been playing pretty solid basketball this year, but another team, 7 of 25 from three, get to the rim. I mean, it's as simple as that sometimes in college basketball, especially when, you know, you're not – when the shots aren't falling, stop shooting or try something different, and that's not what Florida has done. They are a pretty solid three-point shooting team overall, but that does take into account the fact that Keontae Johnson is a 43% shooter, and he's not in the lineup anymore. So they need to get back to basics. Defense will lead this team, but you obviously have to score, and that has been a huge problem, or at least a huge deficiency for the Gators in the Mike White era.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina defended really well, anticipating that Florida would try to get to the rim and really just focus most of the defensive energy on taking that away. To their credit, they did. But Florida, like, you win that game, you would be alone in second place in the SEC. So it's a tougher pill to swallow when you take that into account.
Yeah, and they need to get back to playing like a team that's actually top 20 in KenPom offense. But yeah, it's a tough loss. It's a bad loss.
Not great. But hope springs eternal for some. I think at the end of the day, Florida will likely be a tournament team, just a bump in the road. I don't know if we can say the same for all of our losers this week. It was one of our bigger weeks of losers, and yeah. I think that's that might continue the last few weeks of the regular season as more and more ranked teams fall. It's been a chaotic year, with the exception of Gonzaga and Baylor, and it looks to continue that way all the way through Selection Sunday, which I am extremely here for. That is it for us this week. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with another chaotic week of college basketball. So we will see you then.